Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
The United States Army has rules, lots of rules, including about what Army personnel can wear. No tinted contact lenses, no ankle bracelets, no big jewelry, and only one earring per ear. This past spring, the Army released an updated appearance and grooming policy, and that included new rules about hair.
The policy states that if you're in the Army, you can't wear thick braids, most cornrows, or dreadlocks.
The new regulations touched a nerve among those who believe it unfairly targets African-American women. The Defense Department is now reviewing the rules.
Two medical professionals at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston say there are big issues at stake here beyond military convention. They wrote about this on WBUR's Common Health blog in a piece they called Caution: Acceptable Black Women's Hairstyles May Harm Health.
Tamara James Todd is associate epidemiologist and an instructor in medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and Therese Fitzgerald is director of the Women's Health Policy and Advocacy Program at the Connors Center at Brigham and Women's. Okay, so how does this policy pose a health threat, and to whom?
This policy really is not only a civil rights issue, it's a public health issue. And it is a public health issue for all of us. But in this particular case, it's an issue where policies are compelling women of color who have black hair to use particular products that could be harmful to their health. And they need to use these products in order to conform to the new grooming policies.
But you say for those women who do want to use product that makes their hair straighter, so you don't have to have braids or twists, et cetera, there is a chemical in these products that is dangerous. What is the chemical that we're talking about here?
We're talking about phthalates, really, here. And
phthalates, which we should spell because it is pronounced nothing like the way it's spelled, P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S, but it's pronounced phthalates.
Correct. And these are chemicals that are used as lubricants and solvents, but they're predominantly used in personal care products to hold fragrance. We're not just talking about hair straightening chemicals, but we're also talking about hair oils, hair lotions, and other types of products that people use daily on a regular basis that help to maintain a certain appearance. The problem with those is that we are finding a growing body of evidence that suggests that phthalates are associated with having an increased risk of a variety of poor health outcomes.
Such as what?
Such as type 2 diabetes, increased risk of preterm birth. There are several studies that are now coming out that also suggest that there are associations between higher phthalate exposure in children and childhood obesity and earlier age at menarche when a girl reaches the age in which she starts her period.
What is it that sparked your interest in this?
The social etiquette that we've set up here in the U.S. says that women have to look a certain way. And I think women of color really struggle with that. And that is, I think, the underlying reason for looking at this and what are the health implications for that.
And Therese, that's a good point.
There's one point that I wanted to go back to with the research that we haven't touched upon is that Tamara has found in her research that the phthalates are at higher levels in black women. We also see the health disparities that Tamara is talking about, where we have an epidemic in this country of black women with type 2 diabetes. We have obesity across the board, across all races and sex, both sexes. And we see a lot of health disparities around African-American women with type 2 diabetes and with early onset puberty. So again, not an absolute causation in the research, but certainly disturbing when we see that black women are have lower life expectancies and that we know that they're suffering from chronic diseases and there are certainly a lot of health disparities. So it could be one piece of the puzzle, and we just want to get the word out there that it's important that people know about the research, that the research continues, and that people are empowered with the information that is available right now and hope that more emerges.
Okay, because it becomes a combustible issue when you have the health concerns that are tied in with the social expectations of how women, especially African-American women, should look.
Correct.
So far at this point, and correct me if I'm wrong, the FDA, the EPA have not completely outlawed the use of phthalates in consumer products, correct?
So right now, we're just on the cusp of really looking at these associations. There are a number of studies that have been looked at in a variety of different populations. The body of evidence is growing, and it certainly is putting the onus on getting these regulatory organizations to do something about this.
What's the most convincing research that you've seen on this that says this is sufficiently dangerous, that it's causing health problems, and therefore the product should be either off the market or more stringently regulated?
Most of these studies are looking at associations. So none of this says that phthalates cause these poor outcomes. But what we are seeing is higher phthalate levels are associated with a twofold increased risk for development of type 2 diabetes.
So if there is a body of research, but as you say, more still needs to be done on the danger of this particular chemical, if there's a body of research, how are you now converting this into a social policy issue?
We are elevating it to a social policy issue by basically getting the word out about this outside of academic circles. Often researchers are putting research out there that is not accessible to the public and to the media. So what we're saying is put the information out there, disclose it, be transparent, and then also with that, there's a parallel process where women and the larger consumer audience knows that these chemicals, these phthalates, could pose a potential health threat to not only them, but to their children.
But why aren't they being regulated that way? Why isn't there a forced disclosure?
It's research that's new and it's early in the process, so we're seeing these associations and it's one of those areas where we need more research.
Tamara, you're an epidemiologist, but you also have a personal story here to share. Can you talk to us about that?
A friend of mine who is African American, who works for a large corporation, had been doing very well, had been very successful in her company, had been promoted several times, and she and her husband made a decision to have their first child, and she decided at that time that she wanted to go natural and not use any chemical relaxers and also use natural hair products. She opted to wear braids, so using natural human hair and wearing multiple braids that would allow her to basically not apply chemical relaxers or other synthetically made products.
And so she's looking less conservative.
She's looking less conservative as far as kind of a corporate America professional environment goes. And she did notice that she no longer was up for promotions or was the go-to person for a variety of different projects that she had been managing and was being passed over, essentially. And she attributed this to the wearing of braids. She felt that her hand was being forced as far as what she needed to do to kind of maintain acceptable professional appearance in the workplace. And that's not in discussion in our boardrooms where we're making decisions as far as grooming policies go in the workplace.
So what is the best route forward in this? Tell me what you think, Therese, as somebody very much entrenched in social policy.
We need more transparency and disclosure. So we really need government officials to look at the regulations that are out there on these types of chemicals. What do companies need to disclose on their packaging? How specific do they need to be so that consumers can be informed? I think the second point that we want to make is that given the information, consumers need to know what they have, because we believe that what the consumer doesn't know can hurt them, in the sense that they need to know that what phthalates are and what the impact can be on their health.
But is it absolutely clear what the impact can be?
It's a strong association, and it's been replicated. It's not causal, it's true, but the information should be presented in a way that it's not misleading and where people know that the research is still being undertaken. But to be able to put the information out there, I think, is crucial. At the very least, having government officials and policymakers take a look at this research and see where it needs to go and what we need to do with it.
So there are a lot of calls to action here. It would be one for us as consumers, and especially those of us who use hair product, and another one for corporate boardrooms to be aware of what they are even subtly requiring of employees, and also policymakers.
Exactly.
Thank you both for speaking to us. Therese Fitzgerald is director of the Women's Health Policy and Advocacy Program at the Conner Center at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and Tamara James Todd also is at Brigham and Women's Hospital. She's an associate epidemiologist and instructor in medicine there. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And stay with us. Coming up, looking for solutions to the epidemic of sexual violence on the nation's college campuses. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. This is Radio Boston.